Welcome to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host and producer, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprise throughout Michigan. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
This is Gary Baker, and I'm here on the Internet Advisor Show. I'm with Ed Rudell, Cal Carson, and we have some really great guests that are coming in. We're going to talk podcasts. We're going to talk about what's new at the Detroit Zoo, something you might not think about from the Detroit Zoo, and drones. What's happening with the new drone registration law? Right here on the Internet Advisor Show, we've got a special show for you, 3 hours. Stay tuned. Hey, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show. This is Gary Baker. Foster has the day off, but I'm here with the usual posse, as Foster would say. Ed Rudell, welcome, Ed.
Oh, it's always great to be here, and especially during this holiday season when I get to practice and or go shopping for the things I preach. Yeah, that's
right. We tell people to do this, go buy this, and now we get the chance to do that. Cal Carson, welcome. Are you done shopping for Christmas this year?
You won't believe this. I haven't bought a thing yet. Not one.
So now does that mean that other members of your family are actually doing the shopping, or are you yet to shop?
The other members of my family are doing the shopping, and then I will shop approximately 3.5 feet away from my hand right now where my wallet is. I will reach into that, select gifts at random, and put them into handy little wrappers, which I will throw underneath the tree.
There you go. That sounds great. Hey, we've got a great show today. It's a three-hour show, so a special show. We are showing up right after the number one basketball program in the country just finished their game. Congratulations again, and we'll say that a lot this year to MSU. And we'll be soon to watch on television the number one football team in the country as MSU ends up number one, hopefully. So,
you know, it's so good to know that you have a wife that is part of that, because just watching a Michigan fan sit there say those actual words with enthusiasm even is a wonderful thing.
I will tell you, I am through and through a Michigan State football fan for sure. I'd love to see them win the national championship, so that would be wonderful if they can do that this year. Next year, it might be Michigan's turn, hopefully. But this year, we're rooting for MSU. Hey, we've got like I said, a three-hour show, but we have some other guests that are going to stick with us through most of the show, if not all of it, and they've been with us before. Mike has been a partner of ours. Mike Brennan, welcome to the WJR Internet Advisor Show.
Well, thank you, Gary. Usually I'm calling in or something from some remote place around the world, it seems like, but here I am in the studio. Merry Christmas.
Hey, Merry Christmas to you, too, and happy holidays to all of our listeners out there, whatever holiday they celebrate. Matt Rausch, you're also have been on the show many times alone, but you're a partner of Mike Brennan's now.
Yeah, after being friendly competitors for the better part of 20 years now covering tech news in Michigan, we're now working together on a podcast that appears Monday at 3 p.m., but we'll get to that later. It's part of the Podcast Detroit family.
So let's talk podcasts, and let's get to it right now.
Okay.
So, I mean, what's it called?
M squared TechCast.
You can tell we haven't been working together that long. Yeah, we're still working out those sort of winks and points. You know, that you go back and forth in a radio studio.
And it's radio; you can make all those kind of visual kind of cues. So,
yep.
So M, obviously M2 in Mike and Matt show.
Mike and Matt,
and you do podcasts, but you do a live podcast. You do a live show.
Yep.
On the internet only, and then do the podcast after that.
Well, it's produced by Dave Phillips, but essentially, yeah, we do the live show, and it's recorded, And then the couple days later or so, it's on the SoundCloud, and you guys are on there as well. I mean, you're part of Podcast Detroit.
Yep,
you can listen to you after you guys do your live thing. Your recorded, you know, MP3 file. I can, boy, I'll tell you, I'm not talking today. I'm used to having a beer in the other studio.
More coffee.
So,
more coffee.
Yeah.
All
so,
right. Okay. There you go.
Anyway, that's how it works. So you can listen to it on demand or you can listen to it live. We picked 3 o'clock Monday because that's more of a business time. And the guests that we bring in are business people. And, you know, the rest of a lot of these other shows are late at night. And I didn't think that would really work for our target audience, as it were.
You know, when you think about it, you guys now do a podcast, so it's audio. But when I've met each of you independently, I met you while you were still working for a major print newspapers in, mm-hmm. in the state of Michigan. Matt, you tell us a little bit about where you started.
Well, I started covering technology more or less purely by accident. I came to Detroit in 1990 to be the banking and finance reporter at Crain's Detroit Business. They had an opening for the retail reporting slot at Crain's and asked me if I'd like to be a retail reporter. And I said, sure, sounds like fun. I can go to the mall and call that work.
And it's kind of business, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Thing.
So
yeah,
still business. So I covered a lot of retail development, covered the opening of Somerset North, that kind of thing. You know, the rise of the big box store. But in the mid-90s, all of these retailers were absolutely terrified of this new and novel medium called the internet, that we were all going to buy everything online and every store and every shopping mall in the country was going to go out of business. Well, it did affect the retail business quite a bit. I mean, try finding a bookstore or a record store these days. But basically, I got fascinated by the idea of the internet, that my computer could be hooked up to every other computer in the world and we could all talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I started writing internet stories that were thinly disguised retail stories. And finally, Crain's gave up in 1998 and sort of created a tech beat and gave it to me.
That's
and then in 2001, wonderful. I started working for...
We'll get to that.
All right.
And we can't mention that radio station. So
yeah, you were going to slip there, I can tell.
So. Yeah, I did that for 12 years, so it's a hard habit to break.
That's right. So while you were doing print, Mike... You were doing print also. You were a print reporter for...
The Detroit Free Press,
and tell
yes.
us about that. How'd you do that? How'd you get there?
Well, they recruited me out of the West Coast. I was in Seattle.
We're going to come back to that. We're going to take a short break. We're going to come back, and not only are we going to finish up with that story, we're going to talk about how you then competed online with online technology and then how you started to work together. So we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after these commercial messages to talk to Mike Brennan and Matt Rausch on the Internet Advisor Show.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. This is Ed Rudell with Gary Baker and Cal Carson. And we're going to have a three-hour show today. And so if you have questions for us, we'll start taking your calls in around 5 o'clock. But before the commercial break, we were talking with Mike Brennan and Matt Rausch. And Mike, you were talking about your distinguished career with Free Press, I believe.
Well, it was...
Distinguished, I'm
distinguished
sorry.
Distinguished or not, but certainly it
extinguished,
was a career. Yes.
Extinguished at the end. Distinguished until then.
Yes. Well, I was in Seattle. I was the managing editor and co-founder of Pacific Rim News Service. I'd been covering technology for 20 years at that point, primarily in the newspapers. And then my old buddy Tom Walsh gave me a call and brought me to Detroit. Now, I think Tom has since retired, if I recall, mm-hmm. just a couple weeks ago.
How did you know Tom?
Turn on the mic. Turn your mic on there.
I was just curious. How did you know Tom?
I met him through mutual friends. I mean, it's a small club, right?
So right, it is.
Everybody knows each other, and especially business writers, because in the beginning there wasn't that many of us because business was not something really cool to cover. And I started covering it in 1980 at the Computer Trade Press in New York
right. Because
I wanted to specialize. Everybody else wanted to be, you know, police reporter or all that jazz. And I didn't want to be a generalist. I wanted to be a specialist. And so I've been a... business tech writer for 35 years.
So you guys have both written about technology print media, and then you decided to start basically competing technology newsletters. Matt, yours was called?
Yeah, the Great Lakes IT Report, the late lamented. It was the brainchild of Rich Homburg, who's now the president of Detroit Public Television, and, you know, as far as I'm concerned, a pretty cool media visionary guy. And he came up with the idea of of the IT report from an email publication that covered the radio business called Inside Radio that blew Broadcasting Magazine out of the water in the late 90s. And he wanted to cover technology, and what better way to do it than through technology? So he came up with the idea of an email newsletter, and that's part of the reason print is in the shape it's in these days. Yeah. Is that there's, you know, obviously all the news is available online now. But I produced the IT report for that other radio station down the dial from 2001 to 2013.
And so. We talked a little bit about it. I remember, and I've known Rich begin because radio, we all know each other. And I was out with some WJR guys one night, and actually it was the Detroit Mackinac Policy Conference up on Mackinac Island, and Rich was there with that other radio station. He was general manager at the time. And so we all got together, so I knew Rich. I walk into a restaurant one day, and I see you, this guy from Cranes, talking to Rich. I know exactly what's going to happen, right? I turned to Rich and I said, oh my God, if you're going to hire him, do not hire this guy because I don't want to compete with him.
Yeah.
And I think he well, immediately hired you, right?
Thanks for the job.
It was a good run. There, you know, so.
But that was your hiring interview, I think,
yep,
wasn't it?
I think
it was. So at the same time, you then became this radio guy and did this IT, Great Lakes IT report. Mike Brennan, you were had your own. You decided to leave the Free Press because you could cover technology all the time in a better way, and you formed a company that's now one of our partners here on the Internet Advisor Show. What was that?
Well, the legal name is Michigan News Network, but everybody knows me as mitechnews.com. And so, yeah, I started that in the year 2000, 1 month after the dot-com bubble burst. Good timing, right?
Yeah.
me and Lisa Valley Smith, she started Airfoil just about the same time, and we comment about that all the time. Like, 1 year earlier, gosh, we'd have all this money thrown at us by all these investors, but timing.
Timing.
So I got to ask you a question, Matt, because, you know, I know when I first got into radio, I always remember my first time behind the mic. Do you remember the first technology story that you reported on?
Actually, I do. It was my first day at the other radio station, and Roberta Jacina pulls me into the newsroom and says, Compaq is being bought out by, what was it?
Hewlett-Packard.
Hewlett-Packard. Yeah, Hewlett-Packard's buying Compaq. Can you give me 45 seconds on that in 5 minutes? And I didn't even know where the bathroom was at that point. I had not yet logged onto my computer for the first time, so I sat down, got to a computer, looked at the wires, wrote something out literally in longhand, and went into the studio and read that story during morning drive about 8:30 in the morning. That was the first one I did there. So. That was interesting.
Yeah, trial by fire.
I had been in radio before, all the way back to high school. So I had done radio news before, but that was my first time at that radio station. Was my very first day on the job, about 15 minutes into the gig. So
interesting. And so now you actually are working with Mike. You know, M2 TechCast.
Yes.
Squared, actually. M squared.
M squared, is that what it's called? But you have a day job.
Yeah, I am kind of this weird hybrid of still a tech reporter, but also a PR guy and an advocate. I work for a nonprofit. It's the Engineering Society of Detroit. It's a 120-year-old professional society for engineers. We have about 3,400 professional members, about 140 corporate members, and we do a tech news website there called techcentury.com. We've been doing that for years. So I also do some tech news, and Mike is still doing mitechnews.com and doing a really great job of that. His focus is a little bit broader. He's got like a news focus kind of as well, politics and, business. Mine is just more engineering and technology. And Mike approached me after meeting with these guys from Podcast Detroit about, could we do a podcast together? I guess, Mike, where'd you get that idea?
Well, they had brought it up. They'd been working on it for a while, about 6 months, before it actually materialized. And, in fact, they were still in the old building downtown, that one where they shot Batman Returns or whatever. But
yeah, we're not sure that's all that got shot in that building.
Yeah, it was like run for your life. Run to the studio door as fast as you can, right?
Hey, so we had a great time the first time you and I showed up down there and pulled ourselves onto that elevator, freight elevator, and the doors closed vertically instead of horizontally. And it was quite
an unusual smell in the building,
too.
But,
it was
somebody
very
was doing
industrial.
Something and not naughty, but we won't talk about that. So anyway, but they told me then that they were, I didn't realize it was on the QT, so I'm telling people about it, right? Oh, yeah, they're going to start their own show. And Dave calls me up and says, shut up. He goes, we haven't even told these guys we're going to do this yet, so I had to be real quiet. But anyway, I love the idea because, as you know, at MI Tech News, we're really an amalgam of a lot of different news sources. We have 9 different content partners, including you guys,
yep,
and ESD.
Yep.
And so what I try to do essentially is, you know, we're bringing in all these different audiences from all these other mediums and then sharing everything that we're doing in hope of sort of expanding the audience for everyone.
And it's not just news on print, news audio, news video. It's basically news online everywhere people can get to, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can listen to it. You can read it. We send you newsletters. You know, the old push-pull thing, pull being everybody comes to the website, push, we send out the 2 newsletters. We're really scrambling, trying to get in sometime in the first quarter. Don't hold me to it. I'm working with David Simon, and we're going to be launching Video Meeting, and then we're going to be using that as a video vehicle for news as well. So that's
but
coming.
The guys at Podcast Detroit are kind of a neat story, too, because you've got one who's an IT guy. He's a coder.
That's right.
The other one's a sales guy, Bob Waltonspiel, a sales executive with Cisco. They start doing this fun tech podcast Monday nights from 9 to 11, IT in the D. It becomes wildly successful, and they decide to plow the money they're making on this podcast back into this podcasting operation. They develop this really cool studio in Ferndale, and they now have more than 20 podcasts.
33
now.
Yeah,
that are being produced out of that studio. And Mike's and Mine is one of them. And if you have if you have an idea for a show, they'll talk to you. And the fees are really modest, and it's a cool studio. And you know, you can get your program out on the internet, and it will actually sound fairly professional. I think after 12 shows, we're doing pretty good.
It's
anyway,
better. So, yeah. I mean, I'm not a natural radio guy. You know.
I like it. Yeah. So, you know, everybody else must like it.
So both of you guys started off in the what I call pulp-based media. How much longer do you think pulp-based is going to be around, or do you think it will ever go away?
I don't think it'll ever go away completely. I think it's going to become more and more of a niche product and more of a special occasion type product. You know, not an everyday thing. I just look at my kids. But, you know, I call my kids my focus group. They are massive news consumers, but not on print.
Yeah.
So. Well, okay. Well, thanks a lot. We appreciate that, Matt. And we're going to come back right after the commercial break with some folks from the Detroit Zoo. They are doing things to make energy renewable resources being used better there. So we'll see you back here on the Internet Advisor.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. This is Ed Rudell with Kel Carson and Gary Baker. And we're going to be taking your calls live on the air from 5 to 6. And so if you have any questions about technology or on the internet, you want to give us a call. We cannot help you with your shopping, though. That's something we cannot do.
Well, we can suggest something. I've got lots of suggestions.
Yeah, so does my wife. Now, what's a 4K TV and why do I want it? Yeah, they're still very expensive. But we're going to be, Gary, we're going to be talking with Beth Wallace from the Detroit Zoological Society and Manager of Sustainability. Now, that's a mouthful, but it's always good to hear something local that's happening.
That's right. And it's a wonderful story. Beth, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show. Oh, we don't hear her. So, okay, until we get Beth on the line, Matt, the Engineering Society of Detroit had done some work with the Detroit Zoo, haven't you?
That's right. One of the things we do is we manage events and programs for other people at ESD, and we manage an event for DTE Energy that's called eChallenge. And 2 years ago, the Detroit Zoo was a test site for some LED lighting. Basically saved them a ton of energy costs and also made the gorilla enclosure, of all things, more realistic for the gorillas because they could slowly bring the lights up in the morning and change the color of the lighting because they're LEDs, and then slowly bring the lighting down in the afternoon and
mood
change
lighting,
the color
I love
and make it,
you know?
Make it redder. Yeah, that's that and that's for the Great Ape, for the just fantastic Great Apes exhibit that they have at the Detroit Zoo. They have gorillas, chimpanzees, and I think Bonobos. I don't know how you pronounce that, but that's the other great ape that they have there. And they have really cool stuff there for these apes. And they wanted to make the indoor enclosure more realistic, more like their natural habitat. And that's one of the ways they did it, was through LED lighting.
I'm so, just waiting for the time that somebody's going to come on the air and tell us that they wanted to take a nap, so they turned off the lights.
Right.
That the gorillas did that themselves. Hey, one of the problems with not having Foster here is that I don't know how to run this board as well, but we finally got it figured out, and Beth Wells is joining us. Beth, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Thank you so much for having me on. I enjoyed the conversation about the great apes.
Great.
Very cool.
Yeah, it is.
So you're doing some really interesting things at the Detroit Zoo.
Yes, yep. I am the manager of sustainability, so I work on all of the green projects which we house underneath our green print, which is a strategic plan to improve sustainability at the zoo.
So tell us what that means in terms that I can understand.
Sure. So the energy project that you were just speaking of, the lighting, that is underneath that umbrella. We've also done a lot of energy efficiency work, which is a lot of retrofitting LED lights, upgrading some of our systems like boilers to energy efficient heating and cooling. Then we've also worked really hard to reduce our energy use through having small applications of solar. And we're also encouraging all of our staff and guests, when appropriate, to have less fuel consumption, water consumption. We're doing a lot to reduce our waste. We have a really great, bold goal of being zero waste by 2020. So there's a lot of work right now going into place to try to put the infrastructure at the zoo so that we can meet that goal by that deadline.
Beth, this is Ed Rudell. I had a question because I'm thinking about, and have been thinking about, replacing a lot of lights in my house. And I haven't had an opportunity to ask someone in the industry that's already gone through this. Do LEDs really last as long as they say, the LED light fixtures and replacements? Because I'm hearing 10 years that you could get. And if you're running a large facility, you can not only save a lot of money, but you don't have to replace them as frequently. You don't have to pay personnel to maintain the environment. So in a real-life environment like you're running in the sustainability project in the Detroit Zoo, are you running across that the life expectancy of these lighting really do meet the manufacturer's specifications?
Yes, it does. And there's a little bit of upfront cost, but
yes,
as you said, they last a lot longer. Now, I will say that not every application is perfect for every situation, and we've had situations where we put the wrong lights in the wrong fixtures, and it hasn't worked how we had hoped. And so those are some of the lessons learned try to talk to people about as well. And you always want to make sure you're getting the right type of bulb. There's many different kinds of LEDs, so the right type of bulb for the right fixtures.
It's amazing. Over the last few years, it just seems like the Detroit Zoo is taking a leadership role in a lot of different things. I remember as a kid going to the zoo, and it was a lot of fun, but mm-hmm. it seemed like there was a time when maybe the Detroit Zoo people didn't go as often. They didn't it was starting to look old or get old. And now with all of your events and all of the different ways that you're attracting people, it's pretty amazing, kind of this, what I think of as this kind of turnaround or transformation of the zoo. That must have been on purpose, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And it's because we have such a diverse staff that works on a diverse range of issues. It's been an amazing place to work, and I encourage folks who haven't been to the zoo in a while to come check it out, because there's just a lot of really great change happening. And you were talking about the great apes. We now have a new wolf exhibit, or a new wolf wilderness. It's supposed to mimic their natural environment, and so they have a lot of space. And they're very cool and interactive, and we continue to add on new habitats that kind of make sure that we're at the top of the game. And the new Polk Penguin Conservation Center is going to be another habitat coming online. It's the largest penguin conservation center in the world. That'll be opening this spring, so I encourage everyone to consider coming out then.
Well, and you should consider it, because in today's technology, with so much technology and so many distractions for kids, I mean, what else can you do as a family? There's so few things as a family you can do. You can go out and cut a Christmas tree. You can go out and see the exhibitions at the Detroit Zoo. I mean, you know, it's one of those family activities that you do not want to cut out.
Getting back to your renewable energy. Hey, it's Mike Brennan from MI Tech News. How you doing? You were working with ITC Holdings. You're going to be using all this electricity they're generating from their wind farms up in the Thumb area. Talk a little bit about how that's all working.
Yeah, so we just purchased through ITC. They provided this donation of renewable energy certificates to offset all of our energy use. And so what that means is that we have audited our energy for the last year, determined how much we're using, and then we purchased renewable energy certificates in the form of wind to offset all of that energy use. And how that works is anytime you have a large-scale wind farm, solar array, anytime they create a megawatt of energy, a certificate is created, and that certificate can be purchased so that individuals, either residential or companies or businesses like the Detroit Zoo, can purchase those and claim the energy, because how it normally works in the energy world, once energy enters the grid, there's really no way to track where you're getting it from. So if you don't have personal application on your house and you don't have that possibility, the only way to really invest in renewable energy is through the certificate program. So that's what the zoo has done, and we now have been completely offset with wind.
So when does that actually kick in, as it were? When do you start that, or are you starting that now?
Yep, it started already, and we're going to be running that program through 2018 and beyond. But between now and then, we're going to be really ramping it up to make sure that we can put on as much on-site application in the form of solar, geothermal at the zoo. And then hopefully we can continue to lessen and lessen our footprint. But we'll keep doing the offsets as long as we need to.
Well, it really sounds like the winds of change.
Whoa.
Nicely done.
I can't even follow that. But Beth, so are they putting in windmills and solar panels on zoo property to generate electricity as well?
Oh, we already have a little bit of solar. We'll be adding to it for sure. And then we hope to do some maybe small-scale wind stuff, but most of the things that we can do at the zoo are mostly demonstration. It wouldn't be anything like having a wind farm. So because we can't generate wind energy at the zoo, renewable electricity certificates are a great alternative for us.
So it's Matt Rausch from ESD, and I hear music, so I think we're going to have to go. Anyway, good to talk to you.
Great to talk to you. Thank you.
Well, thanks a lot, Beth. We're great to have you on the show today. And when we come back after this break, we'll have Enrico Schaefer from Drone Law, and he'll be talking about law as it applies to drones, those new little copters that everyone wants to get for Christmas this year. And we'll talk more about that when we come back on the Internet Advisor.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. This is Ed Riddell with Gary Baker, Cal Carson, Matt Rausch, and Mike Brennan. Quite a studio full today. And we have a number of great guests coming up, and then we'll take your calls at 5 o'clock. That's my important part, is the 5 o'clock answer questions. You know, I had several relatives give me computers over the last couple of weeks that I've been, you know, just struggling trying to get Windows 8 and 10 on there. And
I gave you, four?
And I've used many of those parts.
Yeah. So you get, at least you used were able to use them and get those out to people that could use them.
Two of them were I was able to redistribute to people, get their original operating system on it, and the other ones I'm using parts from to fix computers that other people. I do that a lot. I mean, that's fun to me. Yeah.
Can I ask you a 30-second question? I keep getting this message on my 6-year-old computer to install Windows 10.
Yes.
I don't want to do that, do I? Because it's an older computer. It has limited RAM. I mean, you know,
yes,
that kind of thing.
Yes, you probably do not want to do that. Right. We had one of our listeners, and we'll talk about that in the third hour of the Internet Advisor, on how to get rid of that pesky message.
You know,
you actually uninstall a service pack that Microsoft pushed to your computer, and you'll stop getting that notification. It's actually a nag message. Microsoft would like to see everyone go to Windows 10, of course.
So what we should do is we should should welcome Enrico Schaefer to the show right now, because we're going to talk about drones, and we'll talk about all of the problems with Windows 10 in the 5
to 6
o'clock
hour. Don't get me started on Windows 10.
Well, then welcome, Enrico.
Go ahead. Yes, Enrico. It's Mike Brennan. How you doing out there, buddy?
Hey, Enrico, welcome to the WJR Internet Advisor Show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, welcome back, I should say, because you've been here before, and now you're going to help us understand this new law. We have to register our drones?
Yeah. You may not have to register your guns, but you're going to have to register your drones, even if you're just a recreational user. Even if you're flying a toy drone, you're going to have to put your name, your address, and some credit card information in with the FAA.
Well,
here comes the question for you that I have for you. When do you consider something a drone? Because, like, I've gone into, like, the CVS store, and you bought, like, $7, you buy this little copter that you can fly around, and it's, you know, it's wireless and that sort of thing. When does it become a drone?
When it drops on someone's head.
Yeah, exactly. So it becomes a drone from the FAA's point of view, which needs to be registered as soon as it's 0.55 pounds or more under 55 pounds, which is huge. So it's really that half a pound limit. And a half a pound, the FAA tells us, is about the same weight as two sticks of butter. So many drones, the littler ones, aren't that half pound criteria. But it doesn't take a whole lot of weight to get over that half-pound limit. And if it's being operated by remote control, even if it's an RC aircraft or an RC helicopter or now these new quadcopters, then the registration requirements kick in. And I got to tell you guys, the civil and criminal fines for failure to register are pretty dramatic.
$250,000, isn't it?
Yikes.
Yeah, and up to 3 years in jail, and this applies to all kids over the age of 13. And if you give your child a quadcopter and they happen to be 12 or younger, then it's up to the parent to register that drone with the FAA on this new website they're going to be launching here on the 21st of December.
Enrico, it's Matt Rausch. I'm just curious, if you want to get into brands, I mean, is like the Parrot AR drone, is that heavy enough? Is that big enough? Does that qualify under this regulation?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it does. I haven't looked specifically at that list, but that's going to that drone, I believe, is going to be over a half pound, and it is one of the most popular drones out there. And from many people's point of view, they use it as a toy, not for business.
Hey, there's something I just read today that was in Forbes magazine that I need clarification from you on. I can talk today. It said that all this information they're gathering for these registrations is essentially going to be open records, and anybody can get in there and see what your 13-year-old's doing and look at all that other information. Is that right?
Well, kind of. So there's going to be a searchable database by registration number. So one of the ways the FAA is trying to sell this is, hey, if you lose your drone because your registration number will be on the drone, someone could look you up on the website, and then if they know your registration number, they can then see who owns that drone, your name, and your address. So it's not like it's just going to be a website with everyone listed, but once we see what the numbering criteria is, you could just start punching in numbers and see whose names come up. So that's a fairly, we haven't seen the implementation here, but to me that sounds like a fairly hackable or scrapable database.
Okay, now, excuse me. You said weight was an issue. What is the difference in a drone and the old, what I used to call in the old days, remote control airplanes? And do they fall in the same category?
From the FAA's point of view, yes. So it's a drone, by the FAA's definition, is any aircraft that doesn't have someone on board that is connected to a control system, a receiver. So that's RC aircraft, RC helicopter. That could be an RC car if it happens to catch some air over a jump, I suppose. So, it's really that remote control system that becomes the defining tool, unmanned with remote control system.
So it could be guided, but it's not. So they redefined the term drone, which is usually artificially guided, right? Artificial intelligence.
Yeah, exactly. So there's another concept, which you correctly point out, is this concept of autonomous, right, which it actually flies itself, which many of these new drones do. They'll hook into the GPS system, and if you happen to let go of the controls, it'll fly itself. But that's a separate concept, so it doesn't have to be autonomous. And that was one of the big problems that the Academy of Model Aeronautics had, and their $250,000 members of RC pilots, RC aircraft, right? Is why don't you define it as both connected to a control system and autonomous, which would exclude RC aircraft. And RC aircraft community has been around for decades and decades and decades, and there's been literally almost no incidents of any safety issues with RC aircraft. So they very much wanted to be excluded by this, and they are very put off by the fact they get pulled into it.
Yeah, and I could see that. The RC community has been around for a long time, but now that the product is mass market, the FAA had to do something. It's one of those instances where you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. If something happened where one of these things fell out of the sky and there's an injury and they weren't able to track it, which has happened, it's just one of those instances. And I think it's a good thing they had to do something.
They did have to do something, and you hit the nail on the head. The industry actually supported this the government doesn't even care if you register. That was never the point of it. What they need is a point of contact for people who buy new drones, because they don't know anything about the aviation rules, and they don't know they're not supposed to fly by airports, and they don't know they're not supposed to fly over people, and they don't know they're not supposed to fly over other people's private property, right? So the FAA, this is the FAA's way of being able to have a point of contact with everyone who buys a drone, recreational, so that they could say, by the way, there are rules, and hear what the rules are. And I'm betting that part of the registration process is going to be a click wrap, which says, I understand and agree.
You betcha. They're going to make you read those rules, and they got you once.
Everyone's going to read them. Come on.
Hey, real quick, we're running out of time there. And a lot of folks are going to be buying these drones for Christmas for their kids. Give them a quick address where they can get the information from you, Enrico.
Sure. We have lots of good content on www.dronelaw.pro.
Well, thanks a lot, Enrico. It's always great to have you on the air. You're always filled with lots of information about this subject and so much more. In our second hour, we're going to be coming back with Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan for more information from them. And also, we'll have Michelle Gilbert, who is from Comcast, to talk more about high-speed Internet and how it's going to affect you. Stay tuned, and we'll be back with more on the Internet Advisor.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, theinternetadvisor.net. You'll discover past podcasts, our free toolkit with software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and many other resources. You'll also find links to mitechnews.com, our co-sponsored weekly tech and entrepreneur newsletter. Now, let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Hey, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show. Those folks that are dialing in, tuning in to us right now at 4 o'clock. We've been on for an hour right after the MSU basketball game, but we're still going to be on for another 2 hours. So if you want us to answer any questions that you may have, call us from 5 to 6. We'll give you the numbers. But the next hour, we're going to spend talking about all sorts of connectivity. How do you get on the Internet? And how do you use it? So we're going to be back with you after this commercial break.
Welcome back to the next hour of the Internet Advisor. And we'll be here to 6 o'clock to answer your calls, but we have some special guests with us. In the studio with me is Gary Baker, myself, Ed Rudell, Cal Carson. We have Mike Brennan and Matt Rausch.
That's right.
The and Foster Hunter TechCast guys,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You guys do podcasts? Is that what I hear?
Yeah. Mondays at 3 at PodcastDetroit.com.
And anytime online. That's yes. Right. Anytime. 24/7.
You know, that's one thing I do not enjoy. You know, when I wasn't here 2 weeks ago, I actually listened to the Internet Advisor almost all the way to Grand Rapids, and I enjoyed the show so much. I cannot listen to myself when we're doing the podcast. I just...
Your voice sounds different, right?
No, it's not. I just don't. I don't like the sound of it.
I mean, don't feel bad because I can't stand to listen to you either.
Yes, yeah, perfect. So, so everybody's voting. Right, that,
hit
that
the off button.
Yeah. Well done. Well done.
You know.
All right.
No, just kidding. Just kidding. Well, we pull Ed's leg a lot at work because Ed is a gentleman who, if you haven't noticed, when you do call in and ask a question, he's very precise. He's very detailed. He makes sure to get all the information so he can give you an appropriate answer for your technology question, and we razz him a little bit, but actually it's quite good that he's quite thorough, and we do appreciate it.
Well, I remember the first time I met Ed, it was kind of funny, and I'll do it real quickly, but I was just starting to work at EDS, and it was probably a week or two into my stint there, and Ed shows up at my door, and he says, "Hey, I'm in tech support." And I said, "Okay." And he says, "And I do tech support for executives." And I said, "Okay, well, thank you. That'd be great. I don't need anything right now." He says, "I know. If you don't ask me to do something, I'm going to lose my job." Right? And it was so funny. I said, "Wait a minute. You do this for executives?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "If you can explain technology to an executive, you could explain technology to anybody. And come on the show." And Ed said, "Oh, I can't do that. I can't talk about technology on a radio. I just do this for people, right?" And I said just come on as a guest. He said, "I can do that." So he came on as a guest, and we said, "Do you want to come back the next the next week?" And he goes, "Yeah, I could come back as a guest for the next week too." After the second one,
I've been here ever since.
Ever since. And how long ago was that? 10 years? Something like that?
12 years, going on 13. But that's not how I remember it. I remember helping Gary, and then very quickly, within 2 minutes, I said, "You don't need my help. You know exactly what you're doing." And I think I've won him over.
Absolutely. I thought, wow, he can explain this so that it's easy to understand. So anyway, so we've got a great show. Coming up, we have three different guests, three different segments through this hour, and then we'll answer your questions starting at 5 o'clock. But we have been doing this series of bringing on different companies that providing high-speed internet access, kind of that, we can't call it the next generation, but certainly a step up in access. So we've talked to
Metro. Yes, the details that go on in the background that most of us aren't even aware of.
But Rocket Fiber was one that came on last week with us. This week, we are going to talk to, in a few minutes after the break, we're going to talk to Jan Ness, who is the CEO of Online Tech, and he's also the president of the Internet Service Providers Association here in Michigan. We're also going to talk to Teresa Mask from AT&T, their high-speed internet that they're building here in Michigan, and then Michelle Gilbert at the last segment in the hour. And Michelle is with Comcast high-speed expansion plans in Michigan. She will tell us all about, she's been on the show many, many times with us, talking about different aspects of what Comcast is doing. And that is really kind of a very involved plan, an evolving plan that Comcast is doing for the residents here in the state of Michigan.
Isn't that amazing? And, you know, just a few minutes ago, you were talking about when you guys first started doing the show and that sort of thing. And remember, you only had a couple of choices of getting onto the internet. It was dial up and dial up,
right?
And that was the only thing that was offered out there. And now, look, you've got multiple choices and that blinding speed.
And the speeds—that's what I was going to mention—is a slow home connection is 30 meg now.
Yeah,
I mean, I remember
right.
when universities couldn't get 30
well,
meg, right?
Except last night when it seemed like everyone decided to watch Netflix at the same time. You know, that's what I did not realize. Netflix—it's a big problem. They take over 60% of the bandwidth of most of the U.S. internet. Over the weekend. It's just nuts.
And that's why this is so important, is it is behind the scenes, but it's going to help us all get streaming video and for all of us and do it in the right way. Ed, we had somebody came in, and I can't remember now who started the YouTube video where they had the modem screeching sounds.
Oh, that was me.
It was that you, Cal, that gave it to us. I remember Ed saying, "You know what? it's really sad when I can tell you that that's not a Hayes, that's a U.S. Robotics modem. It's a 28.8, but right there, see, it stepped back down to a 14.4. And it was like...
It's like the guys who could tell the difference in the exhaust note between a Mustang 5-liter and a Trans Am from the 80s.
Yeah. Right, I'm going, and you should not know this. You know, you should not be able to remember that stuff. Anyway, so we are going to take a commercial break here in a few minutes or in a minute, and then come back with Jan Ness, Teresa Mask, and Michelle Gilbert. First of all, I'd like to know if anybody out there call us back at 5 o'clock and tell us if you actually use dial-up anymore. Does anybody use dial-up? No, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
We're going to take that commercial break, and we will come back with Jan Ness from Online Tech and talk about new data centers here in the state of Michigan.
Yeah, so welcome back to the Internet Advisor. We're back here with Gary Baker, Ed Rudell. We've got Matt Rausch, and we also have Mike Brennan in studio today.
And it's a little bit of a casual show today. That's all right.
That's right.
So, yeah, caught us a little bit napping here. We were coming back after the break, and nobody was paying any attention. But we're all back. We're all on mic now, and there's quiet in the studio once again.
I can see Foster right now. He's saying they're running that show as loose as a bag of Skittles.
It's something like that, I'm sure. Hey, let's get right in and talk to Jan Ness, is the CEO of Online Tech. And Jan, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Hey, Jan, it's Mike Brennan.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Matt. You know, I was just listening to you guys, and I think between the four of you, Gary, Ed, Mike, and Matt, you guys have at least a century or 100 years of covering the IT industry in Michigan. Would that be right?
You are being so kind. It's only 100 years.
Sometimes it feels like a century just on me.
Yeah, just each of us.
Well, especially if you're talking internet years, right? You know, that's the
it's like
shorter
dog
time.
Years, right?
Right, yeah.
Oh, that's 500 internet years.
There you go. Hey, Jan, you know, there's been a lot of press lately about this new data center, new company that's maybe coming to the state of Michigan. They wanted some tax breaks. You have been quoted in other newspapers and online, and I know Mike has done something on you. Tell us what this is and why the internet companies already here in Michigan, why you care?
A company out of Las Vegas, they build massive data centers and sell it to, you know, global providers like the eBays of the world, is going to build a large data center here. One of their requirements was that they get tax breaks that are consistent actually with about 22 other states in the United States that offer varying degrees of sales and use and property tax exemption for both the data center and the gear that you put in there. The notion is that gear is a little bit like manufacturing gear, and why would you pay sales tax on it? You want to charge a tax on what's being consumed at that gear, the products that gear makes. So that's the whole concept. They announced they would come only with the tax breaks. They put the legislature on a pretty tight time frame, which is, you know, always a nice thing to see these guys move quickly. And it ended up passing, and it's on the governor's desk right now.
So it originally, though, there was some thought that it was only going to apply to new companies coming to Michigan, and that didn't seem very fair.
No, right. You don't really know where those early drafts came from, but the early drafts were not what we would call fair across the board to all the providers in Michigan. And we felt that was important. That was, in fact, the most important thing. Not so much how much or what the tax break was going to be, but just as long as it was fair across the board. We respect and understand why a state would want to invest in this. Tax policy is sort of beyond my pay grade, but we get and understand it. As long as it's fair, you will affect the Michigan's place and make it competitive. If it wasn't going to be fair, all you would do is just picking winners and losers.
Jan, it's Matt Rausch. I was just curious, are other states offering similar incentives for data centers? Is this something we kind of had to do in order to remain competitive?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, so five or six years ago, I think there were maybe five or six states, something like that, that did, and they were pretty narrowly defined. But as of now, I'm pretty sure it's 22 states that offer these breaks. And, you know, it's not too dissimilar to, you know, we don't charge sales tax for newspapers, and we exempted them from sales tax, I think, in the 40s or 50s here in Michigan, because we wanted to invest in that happening. And so states do that. That seems to be, you know, this digital age is the future. And so, yeah, Michigan did kind of need to do this to stay competitive.
Hey, Jan, it's Mike Brennan. A question for you. Now, I know this is not a done deal. Switch wanted all these things. I was amazed how quickly the legislature moved on this. Clearly, they wanted this to happen. But this isn't some ploy now they're going to go to New York and say, well, Michigan gave us this deal, we're going to go to New York unless, you know, or something like that. There's not politics going on here, is there?
Well, I'm sure there's some politics. I really am not privy to the conversations going on between Switch and the state. I'm going to take them at their word. You know, I mean, I think they're a good, solid operator. They said that if the state would do this, they would come. And I think all indications publicly, their statement is that they're coming. But I do think the bill is still on the governor's desk for signing. I don't know that he's signed it yet, but I think it's a done deal.
You know, it makes a lot of sense. Obviously, we don't want to disadvantage our state, and we know that there's some states that do have higher bandwidth. We are trying to catch up in certain parts of the state. That one that is coming in new is talking about Grand Rapids and the west side. Sometimes. They are not as well served as where there's higher populations. But you represent all of the ISPs, or at least all of the big ISPs here in Michigan. Tell us a little bit about the association, what you do.
I'm sure it's called the Michigan Data Center Alliance. And we formed recently as this legislature was being developed, because we felt it was really important that you know, our government body understand the breadth and depth of the industry as it existed in Michigan and what drove us to the success that we had here. So we got together pretty quickly, and we represent nine companies with 38 data centers, about 1,000 employees. Look, you know, we're all growing an average of 12 to 15% a year. So in 6-7 years, you do the math, we'll hire another 1,000 people. And these are, you know, across nine companies here in Michigan that will happen. So, you know, it's definitely a real industry here in Michigan. Michigan's cold. Land is not very expensive. And it's a very safe place. We don't have hurricanes. And so we've been pounding the table about what a great place Michigan is to have data centers for a long time. We're really excited to see the state wants to invest in it. And people outside the state see Michigan as a great place for this too.
So by landing this switch in the Steelcase Pyramid building, that's going to be a good thing? That might attract more business for all the data centers?
Yeah. I mean, we look at it as a good thing for sure.
You know, when
basically what happens is, this is the way we think of it. You build the data centers, the gear ends up there, especially if it's got a competitive tax treatment to all the locations, because you can put gear a lot of different places. And then the jobs follow there. These are tip of the spear jobs, IT jobs. I mean, our guys see hundreds and hundreds of different kinds of environments every day, because we do this for a living compared to an IT team sitting in one company.
Yeah, Jan, it's Matt Roush. I wanted to ask you about the job creation aspect of this. This isn't like a factory, right? You're not taking raw material and outputting a finished product, and you need so many people to do that. So what is the job creation sort of profile of a data center? How many of them work for the data center, and how many for the clients?
Well, and really, it's an enabler too, right? It's really about the job creation at the client end because of them being able to get high-speed bandwidth, right?
It is a little bit. I think, to be honest, our industry has to, and this is why the bills require this, we have to prove that we create these jobs. There is some evidence that we don't. You know, that you build a big building, you put a bunch of equipment in it. How many people do you really need to run that building? Is it a couple dozen? So you can build a 200,000 square foot building, and you may be able to run that data center with eight people. But where you do need the people is the people who are going to manage the gear. And so, in our case, when our customers bring their gear and put it in our data center, yeah, we don't need a whole lot more people, but because they take care of the gear. But most of our customers don't want to do any of this stuff anymore. They say, you buy the gear, you take on all the stuff that I'm doing now. I want my IT people working on at customers and end users, and you guys do all the middle of night stuff. That does drive a lot more jobs.
You know, Jan, you have four big data centers here in Michigan, but you also now are in Indiana. You have a data center there, too. How's the difference between Michigan and Indiana to work with?
We love both. I'll tell you, Indianapolis is a wonderful, wonderful place, and an incredibly receptive. They did give us some tax breaks when we came there. We have had really good luck recruiting people there. We've recruited some people there and moved them up here. That has been a really real success for us. Michigan has been a tougher economic environment in the past 5 years, which we're really proud of the growth rate we achieved. But we do see a little more robust business activity down in Indianapolis.
So, you know, as the oldest ISP here in Michigan for business, we're very proud of what you've done. I'm personally proud of it because of my involvement with online tech previously, not involved now with you guys. I'm so proud of what you've done. Where are you going to expand next? Do you know that yet?
So we love the Great Lakes states. So if the state touches the Great Lakes, we think that there's still sort of white space in that market.
Okay. So, Jan, we really appreciate you coming on. I know that you know, it was interesting to go through some of this legislation. You have served with SBAM, the Small Business Association of Michigan, so you're kind of familiar with the political aspect of what goes on here in the state. Tell us a little bit about Michigan in about a half a minute. What it's like to work as a technologist here in small businesses. And you got about
30 seconds.
15 seconds.
15 seconds.
It's a fantastic and growing market, especially with what's going on in Detroit and Grand Rapids and Traverse City. There's no better time to do tech work here in Michigan.
Jan Ness.
Get a degree and come join us.
Hey, yeah, there you go. Jan Ness, President and CEO of Online Tech. Thank you very much. We're going to be back after this commercial break.
And welcome back to the Internet Advisor. I said and at the beginning of that. I'm after my kids for starting sentences with so, and then I start a sentence with and. This is the Internet Advisor.
Well, you were just talking about all the other stuff at the break, and then it was and now we're back in the show.
And now we're back.
And do you think I care?
I'm just trying to lighten the mood compared to that last commercial break.
And at least you're not saying, like I told your screener, or that's the other big one in radio, right?
Yeah,
or
right.
I just want to say. And then say what you're going to say.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, we were talking earlier, and Matt, you were talking about something that we were going to talk about. And I said, no, please don't. We'll keep it real fresh. We're going to talk about it on the air. We won't talk about it ahead of time.
But just keep giving away all the secrets of radio, okay?
We really need a webcam during the breaks that people can watch while they're listening to our commercial breaks.
We're
going to
get
and
you
see
that.
What's going on.
We're
going
to get you that in the first quarter. So,
okay, thank you, Mike Brennan.
Able to watch, and then you can see Cal and Ed going at it, see what they really do on the breaks.
That means I'm going to have to not come to the studio with my pajamas on.
Yeah, there you go. Or those little fuzzy bunny slippers you wear.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yep, and the margarita, of course. Yep. So. Coming up next, I think we have Michelle Gilbert from...
No.
Teresa.
No.
Teresa?
Teresa Mayer.
Yes.
You have to read it in alphabetical order. AT&T, Teresa Mask.
Teresa Mask is the media relations person at AT&T Michigan, and I've been on the air with us before. Teresa, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Hey, you guys.
Hey, we are having a great time. Wish you could be here. Glad you're on the phone with us. We have had a number of weeks now, we have been talking about high-speed technology, high-speed internet access here in Michigan. AT&T is building a tremendous amount of new network and new capability here in Michigan. Tell us about it.
We are so excited to be able to do that. You know, we are expanding AT&T Gigapower, which, as you know, is our one gig internet service. And we announced, I think, last week that we're going to be committed to coming to Detroit, which is pretty exciting because we're already in 20 other markets, you know, including Chicago and Austin, where we started in 2013. But we will be in Detroit, which will mean that we're going to be committed to 54 metro markets with this amazing speed.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. I got to ask you, Teresa, does this mean I'm going to get fiber all the way to my house, or are we still doing the last mile in good old copper?
No, it means that you're going to be getting fiber. It's 100% fiber, which is excellent. You know, what we're doing is building on the existing capabilities, you know, the networks that to enhance, to expand that internet to these fast speeds. And to be specific, you know, in many of these neighborhoods, you know, our fiber optic network runs from the central office to the neighborhood equipment. You know, just like you said, from that point, you know, we upgrade existing copper to fiber.
Okay.
So it's going to be 100% fiber. It's going to be super fast, and customers are going
to
love it.
Well, you know, the best way to be able to really, really get that word out is to put a piece of fiber all the way to my house, and I'll tell everybody.
And you have a big mouthpiece? I know you have a big mouth, but you have a big mouthpiece? It's right here on the Internet Advisor Show.
All right, Teresa, it's Matt Rausch. I was just wondering, do you have a timing for this rollout? And like Cal, I want to know, when are you coming to Dearborn? There's a little house on Chicago Street there that I'm kind of interested in.
Looking for sweetheart deals there.
That house, Matt. Yeah, you know, I wish I could give you a specific date. We really don't know, but I can tell you that on average, when we've made these commitments, they've actually taken us less than a year from the time we announce Gigapower and the plans and the time that it actually comes to fruition. So I'm hoping that by the end of 2016, we're going to be in Detroit.
This is Mike Brennan, Teresa. How you doing? The other thing is, how big is that footprint going to be? When you say Detroit, you're talking about a really big area. Does it extend to Ann Arbor, where I live? I mean, if these guys are getting special deals, why can't I?
We all want them, right?
Yes.
You know, they have not given us a lot of information on exactly where, exactly when. We have committed to it, which is huge. And when we get that extra information, we definitely will be sharing it with our friends here. One of the things that people can do is go on AT&T.com because you can register to get some more information. You can put your zip code in, and once we know exactly where those places are, if you're, you know, you put in Ann Arbor, Dearborn, guys, it'll let you know if you're going to be there. The site includes information around the services that we're providing and the opportunities for getting it in your area. So that's AT&T.com/GigapowerMap. So check that out.
Teresa, I would imagine then it's probably a little early in the game to get any idea what sort of pricing or bandwidth structures we'll be able to get.
Yeah, you know, it's too soon to share the specifics about the offers, but I can tell you that, you know, they're specific to each market. So, you know, what it costs in Chicago may not necessarily be what it costs in South Carolina or Detroit, but we are competitive to the marketplace. So as soon as we get that information, obviously we'll be sharing it because people want this and they're going to want to know what they have to pay.
You know, I just had this picture in my head of jumping up and down the street like a little kid looking at an ice cream truck. The next time I see an AT&T truck, you know, I'm going to be jumping up and down and chasing that truck.
You know, that's funny that you mentioned that because this is what people want. I mean, they have been asking for faster speeds and, you know, I'm excited to say that we're giving them, and this is crazy fast speeds. You know, with this, you can download 25 songs in a second. I mean, amazing. It's about 50% faster than, you know, the average internet speed. And people are they're going to be able to download their favorite TV show in less than 3 seconds, an online HD movie in less than 36 seconds. I mean, it's just, it's crazy fast. I mean, there's no other way to explain it.
Well, Teresa, question, because something in my mind just kind of popped in. Now, AT&T U-verse, does that all run on copper or does that run on fiber already?
You know, people who get this, you know, you're going to be able to choose between whether or not you want this on DirecTV or U-verse. You know, DirecTV is part of the AT&T family now. So this AT&T Gigapower works in the areas where we have home internet, U-verse or DirecTV.
So how do we get that high-speed bandwidth out of the typical population centers out into the rural areas, because we know that that's kind of a big equalizer. People can live farther away from cities and still get high speed if it's available. Are the plans for just Detroit, or do you have plans to go beyond that over time?
We do have a plan that I'm not always privy to, as you guys can imagine, but the plan is to continue to expand. You know, we are doing a lot in that area, you know, even down to the rural broadband that we announced early this year, where, you know, we have $29.7 million to bring 10 megabits to 86,000 rural homes and businesses. We're trying to get to areas that don't necessarily have faster speeds. The cool thing about this is that people have a choice. So not necessarily everybody wants one gig. Some people want, you know, different speeds. The people who want this fast speed are people who are doing some interesting things, like the tech innovators in Detroit. You know, you guys cover the industry, so you know there's lots of them. They're going to be able to take this speed, and they're going to be able to do a lot faster things with it. They're going to be more productive. You know, they're going to be able to back up their data quicker, video conferencing and all that. And then it's also for the people who just want to have fun. I'm not a gamer, but there are a lot of people who like to game. The thing about AT&T Gigapower is that it's symmetrical speed, so the download and upload speeds are the same, and I'm told that's really huge when it comes to this kind of stuff.
I know the 54 markets are really big metropolitan areas. You talked a little bit about your rural strategy, but I grew up in Grand Rapids, which is a metro area of about 1 million. At some point, do you think that's going to be on the horizon for what you're launching here?
I hope so. You know, I'm thinking that if you guys go on AT&T.com, any of our customers, and they say that they want it, that we might be able to get it there, you know, because one of the things that we're doing is responding to customer demand. That's how we made the choice in where these first 36 markets are. You know, we focus on markets within our service territory, you know, where we already provide home phone, internet, and TV service. And then we just try to identify the communities within those markets that demonstrate a strong need and an investment and that demonstrate a need for people wanting it. So I think that combination will, you know, help influence the decision.
Well, I guess that's going to make it really kind of tough on you guys on the cellular side, because now I'll go home, I'll be able to surf the internet at blazing speeds, and then when I pick up my AT&T phone, it's going to seem a little bit slow, even though it's got fast internet on there. Are you guys going to be enhancing that to kind of match it up, or do I just connect to my Wi-Fi when I get home and enjoy it on my phone?
I think that probably works best with the home internet. But, of course, you know, that kind of question I'm going to take back to the experts who can give me a better answer I can get back to you guys. But I do know that, you know, home internet is the best way to access these fast speeds.
Boy, I will tell you, though, if you can figure out how to do that on cellular, my kids don't use their computer very often anymore, not as often as they use phones outside of the home. And they're starting to think that the real computer that they have is in their pocket, not.
So does a lot of other people. I mean, that's really where it's at. And they're, we're running out of time.
Well, Teresa, thanks so much for being a guest on the Internet Advisor today. We really appreciate all the information about the new high-speed internet that AT&T is bringing to Michigan, and we're going to be looking forward to that. Coming up next in the next segment, we'll have Michelle Gilbert from Comcast to speak a little bit about her service that they offer, and so much more. So stay tuned on the Internet Advisor.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. This is Ed Rudell with Gary Baker and Cal Carson. And we also have some special co-hosts in the studio today. We have Mike Brennan and Matt Rausch.
You got it
from
right.
M-Squared.
M-Squared TechCast.
Yes, podcastdetroit.com, Mondays at 3 p.m. And then later in the week, online, available as a download.
Excellent.
And where would we go to download that from?
PodcastDetroit.com or SoundCloud.com, and just search for M2 TechCast, numeral 2.
We're also on iTunes, by the way.
Sorry, I'm an Android guy, so I don't speak this iOS stuff, but that's okay.
And now you can introduce Michelle.
Michelle Gilbert from Comcast has some expansion of high-speed internet that they're going through right now as well.
And Michelle, thank you for coming in the studio. You've been on the air with us many times, and you have some new news.
And the last time she was on, she brought a really, really, really smart guy with her from Comcast. But now we'll have to just settle with the really, really smart Michelle.
Right. Smart in a different way, as we talked about
earlier. That's right. Yeah. She's our Chardonnay as opposed to our Merlot.
Right.
Ooh, I like that.
You need both.
Nice. That's
yeah, so I think it's pretty telling that you've got so many different tech companies that are doing things to increase speeds. And definitely there's a lot of sexiness around the whole term 1 gig right now.
Right.
And The way we see it, we are actually right now testing a service that will provide 1 gig speeds over our existing hybrid network. Our hybrid network is part coax and part fiber. What's really cool is once we do the testing and have all the equipment that we need, what it means is that we will actually light up 1 gig across our network. So we're not going to be having to go and, you know, dig and build trenches house by house. We're actually going to be taking a market like Detroit, which is where we're starting, and lighting up across the entire area.
Okay, Michelle. So I'm going to put you on the spot. This was going to be a tough one.
Okay.
So when you turn on 1 gig for everybody, obviously that's going to come with a cost.
Sure.
Will you still be able to run the slower internet
absolutely.
For people?
Absolutely.
And
oh, gosh.
So you have a choice yeah. of either one.
Oh, absolutely. We have several tiers today. We have tiers that range between 10 megabits per second all the way up to actually 2 gig. A lot of people don't realize it, but we did introduce a service this year where if you truly, truly need the speeds, we will build fiber to your home and provide you with symmetrical 2 gig service. The thing is, not everybody needs that. The vast majority of people today, the way they're using the internet, even the heavy users who are gaming and who are streaming Netflix and Hulu and everything else, they really only need 75 megabits per second. It's not like going to a faster speed. Netflix is going to stream faster to you because they don't need to. That's not what they need. So 1 gig today is somewhat of a niche product because there is a definite group of people who will use that kind of speed, but most people aren't using it today. So it's about what's going to happen in 5 to 10 years.
Describe who that group of people is that wants 1 gig. Who are you hearing from?
Who are we hearing from?
Yeah.
A lot of people who do, you know, heavy work at their house. I can tell you, for example, I met a guy in Indianapolis and he runs a whole radio show out of his house. So he has to upload huge, huge files to the station on a regular basis every single week. So our 2 gig service was something that he was looking at because he really needed those speeds.
And it's certainly a lot cheaper than going, you know, having to drive to the studio or building a studio to near you where you can take and do this type of thing. So it's
right.
wonderful to be able to do that.
But I would imagine what graphic design, physicians, people like that also
engineers.
That deal with big data files, big image files, right? I mean, those are the kind of folks who might want that.
Sure. And again, it's also depending, are you uploading or are you downloading those files?
Right.
You know, and people, I mean, a lot of people work from home. We also provide business services at a home, and that's an entirely different area that you need to go into when you are running a business out of your home and what you actually need to support your business.
You know, I do have to thank you and thank Comcast because we had a personal experience recently. We needed to have a modem changed out, hadn't done that in 5 years, so we were a little behind. And somebody came to the house, and I get a phone call from my wife. She says, this gentleman's here from Comcast, and he needs to talk to you. So he asked me a couple questions. I told him the answers. And it seemed like he was a little nervous, right? So I get home that night, and I said, you know, gee, how did that go? Because it seemed pretty nervous. He must have been pretty new. And my wife said, first of all, it took him a while. And he was nervous, and he didn't quite know everything that he needed to about the way I had hooked it up, which I had a bunch of things hooked into it, so that might be understandable. But she said he was extremely polite, very conscientious. He told me it was his first real job. He had been working smaller jobs. He wanted to get better. He wanted to get into a kind of a real job. Comcast took a chance on him, and he basically apologized for taking so long with her. She said, it was so good to see Comcast being able to make that kind of a job available. She was really excited that Comcast was doing that, and I guess I got to say thank you for not only for the great service that we get, but for employing people and giving them that chance.
Well, I want to thank you for sharing that story with me. And when we are off the air, if you want to give me that gentleman's name, I will make sure that his supervisor and all the way up to the VP of the department know about that. We're extremely focused on customer service. And one of the things that we're doing over the next 12 months is we're investing in Michigan, hiring 400 people here. Those are techs that are coming to your house to install or fix cable, and it's also customer service reps that are at our call centers in Ann Arbor, Sterling Heights, and Plymouth, right here in Michigan. We want to get better with customer service, and I'm thrilled to know he was so conscientious. And I can only imagine how you wired your house and what he had to figure out, Gary.
Well, okay, so that might have been a little bit of the problem, but
this is the guy that ran the first ISP in Michigan here, you know? I mean, come on, you know, so you're dealing with a pretty specialized audience.
Absolutely. Twisted pear copper in there, right?
So. Yeah, right. He was probably going in expecting something very simple, and he was like, whoa.
That could have been the problem for sure.
So, Michelle, yeah. Getting back to what we were talking about the gigabit bandwidth and that sort of thing, Ed and I were talking a little bit earlier about it. You know, in the evening and on the weekends, there's this little thing called Netflix that kind of fires up and chews up bandwidth like crazy, and I'm sure Comcast is quite aware of that. When you go up to that higher speed, will I now see that go away where, you know, it seems like it's a lot busier on the internet in the evenings and on the weekends?
So that's a really good question, and I don't even know if I could answer it. What I would say, though, is, and I don't know if you are with us or not.
I am with you.
You are.
I think we all are.
I am one with the force.
Okay, so what I would like to do is I would like to figure out and talk with you afterwards about why is that happening on the weekend, what kind of plan are you on, and what does that mean, and let's get someone much smarter than me, maybe that really smart guy I brought in last time, to kind of talk about, is it something else going on in your home that might be interfering? That, you know, is there another device that's slowing down the rest of your devices?
That's a good thing to check out. I'll definitely do that.
Okay.
Well, seeing all, we're coming to the end of the hour. We'll be coming back at the top of the hour. And guess what? It's time for us to start taking your questions that you may have on technology, on the internet, here on the Internet Advisor. And we'll give you the phone number to call. And it's 1-800-859-0957. That's 1-800-859-0957. Call for the Internet Advisor. And remember, the only dumb question that you can ask is the one that you don't ask. Didn't that come out wrong? That's
something
the way that Foster always does it.
Michelle Gilbert from Comcast, thank you very much for
being
here.
Absolutely
anytime.
A pleasure to have you here. It's always great to have you here. Hope you come back. And we'll have the guys from M Square and the D, and we'll see you later on the Internet Advisor.
Thank you for joining us for these first 2 hours of our special show today. Hour number 3 is available as a separate download. Please visit our website and download The Third Element, which was our listeners' questions and answers.